I'm the sports professor, Rick Haro, and welcome to Beyond the Scoreboard, the insider's view of a trillion-dollar sports business getting even bigger. Finish the NBA All-Star Game, heading to the beginning of NASCAR Super Bowl. They do it backwards, Daytona 500. The pitchers and catchers reporting leading to spring training, opening of a new building in Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, ballpark of the Palm Beaches, 15 Arizona, 15 Florida, the spring training derby, NHL getting ready for their second half of the season in the playoffs, combine, NFL paying student athletes. It's always a big deal. We have this week somebody who's covered a number of these different issues, USA Basketball, Phoenix Suns, Philadelphia 76ers, Jerry Colangelo, NBA Board of Governors, Grand Canyon University, too numerous to mention. We'll also have our top issues of the week, off the beaten track, final take, and a whole host of issues coming up on Beyond the Scoreboard. Welcome again to Beyond the Scoreboard. It's certainly a busy week. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, and the like. There are a number of issues this week. If you want to see all 15 marketing, endorsement, news, business, sports issues for this week, look at CSNNE. We've got them all there. But some of the highlights. Mere months after successfully pulling off the 16 Summer Olympics, Rio sadly slipped back to its depressing ways. We've talked about that before. The city decaying rapidly, says the New York Times. 31 towers, which comprise the athletes' village, supposed to be sold as luxury condos after the games, but fewer than 10% of the units were sold. Maracanã, the site of opening and closing ceremonies, as well as soccer matches, a brown field, and the electricity shut off. The decay of the Olympic sites happening as a financial crisis engulfs federal, state, and municipal governments. And here's my unfortunate take. Sadly, the state of Rio, not a foreign one for past Olympic sites. Sochi played host to 2014, now a depressing, hardly used city. What makes it even worse, it cost more than $50 billion to put on. And it looks like Rio will resemble the Olympics in Beijing, Athens, and Sochi, rather than successes in London, L.A., Atlanta, and Sydney. Fairly good news, Gonzaga. With the college basketball regular season coming to an end in a few weeks, fans are having a tough time getting their hands on tickets to see them. The demand to see undefeated Gonzaga Bulldogs off the charts, especially at 6,000-seat McCarthy Athletic Center. All tickets already accounted for. Tickets to Gonzaga's last home game sold out or substantially marked up in value on several secondary markets, reselling major and tough tickets at the Kennel, reserved for students and season ticket holders, making it tough for outside fans to even sniff a seat. And here's my take. Ready for March Madness and the Final Four, over $300 million of cumulative economic impact beginning just after the respective conference tournaments. Obviously, stay tuned. How about the Lakers and the NBA? Legend Magic Johnson, not content at being a team advisor, he wants to be the face of the team's front office and to be in charge of all basketball ops. Johnson's been adamant about his intent to be the president of basketball operations for his former team, noting he would definitely give 150% to the job, he says. Johnson currently serves as an advisor to the team alongside EVP Jim Buss, and the team doesn't have a president of basketball operations, which creates a void that Magic hopes to fill. His pitch for being the voice of Lakers front office includes a declaration that his first call would be to Kobe Bryant to get him involved in the organization again. He also said the Lakers struggle to attract free agents. His presence would change that. My take? It may change that, but it would clearly fit a superstar reunion of Magic, Kobe, and others. Good for the NBA, good for the Lakers, and good for superstars. Naming rights, significant source of added income for pro sports teams, and some of the EPL's top clubs finally coming around to that. Tottenham Hotspur planning to drop the name White Hart Lane on their new stadium, while Chelsea looking to make a similar move. The two clubs adopting very different strategies as they seek a naming rights partner in a competitive and crowded marketplace in the capital. Tottenham reportedly looking to raise more than $498 million for naming rights for its new 61,000-seat stadium. Chelsea planning on naming a new 60,000-seat stadium on behalf of somebody on the site of Stamford Bridge. And my take is this. Consistent with other international trends, all sports continue to maximize creative opportunities to generate corporate partnerships, kit deals, stadium naming rights, league naming opportunities, and other long-term creative and corporate revenue streams. How about the Daytona 500? Expanding their digital presence, NASCAR, now the first company to partner with digital video company DeskSight, ready for the Monster Sports and Monster Energy season after Sprint, ready for their Super Bowl, which, by the way, happens before anybody else's at the beginning of their season. NASCAR DeskSight offers news, interviews, and driver spotlights. It'll also have highlights of races, though they'll only go up after a certain period of time after a race, usually the day after. The deal includes vertically integrated media and other opportunities. And my take is this. Getting ready for Daytona and the start of the 2017 season, look for NASCAR to explore virtual reality, other vertical media integration, and more newfangled technology in the future. How about the MLS? They continue to boom across the country. DC United signed on Audi for the naming rights to the team's new stadium. Audi, owned by German-based Volkswagen, reached an agreement valued at $4 million annually for between 10 and 15 years for DC United's new $300 million stadium. The deal, the second biggest deal in the MLS, behind Bank of California's reported 15-year, $100 million deal for LAFC's new stadium. Most naming rights agreements in the MLS are in the range of $2 million per year. The new facility, which will be named Audi Field, set to break ground this month, designed by Populous, 19,400 seats and 60 suites. And here's my take. MLS has more leverage than ever before. New corporate sponsors, increased awareness, new stadium deals. They'll now attempt to maneuver through at least 12 to 15 interested cities to find four expansion commitments over the next few years. Well done. Finally, yeah, it might be cold where you are, but it's warm where I am, South Florida. And as the PGA Tour exited California for the Florida swing, golf has a brand new number one, Dustin Johnson, decisively winning the Genesis Open in Riviera in L.A. last week. And the spotlight now turns to the Honda, the only PGA Tour event in South Florida after Doral departed for Mexico. While the Palm Beach Gardens-based Honda now receiving heightened regional advertising and sponsorship attention as the only South Florida event, the Honda nonetheless anticipating much lower attendance. Now the Tiger pulled out with back spasms. Golfer Pat Perez said it great. Tiger's the needle. Anyone who argues that is crazy. But it's almost like seeing Bigfoot. We don't know when you'll see him, but he still attracts attention. I do know this. Ken Kennerly, the guy who runs the Honda, focusing on the fact that it is the only tournament in South Florida, especially after next week's Doral does go to Mexico, he'll parlay that into a significant attendance and box office bonanza, that is assuming the weather cooperates. That's this week's top issues. If you want to see all 15, log on to csnne.com. Next up, Jerry Colangelo. Jerry Colangelo was the face of the NBA Phoenix Suns in 1968, their kickoff, through 2012. 43-year tenure with Phoenix came to an end in 12 and was the longest tenure in the NBA, but he didn't stop there. He brought Major League Baseball to Phoenix in 98 and served as chairman and CEO of the 2001 World Series champion Arizona Diamondbacks. Back to the NBA Board of Governors 2001-2005, the head of the league finance committee, tremendous impact on franchises in Boston and everywhere else. And oh, by the way, he's also been chairman of USA Basketball from 2005 on when he took over the USA national team program. Hadn't won a major international competition since 2000. Olympic gold after Olympic gold after Olympic gold. 2006 through 2016, he's been managing director, by the way, undefeated since 2007, pretty significant. Author of two books, Return of the Gold, which profiles Colangelo's journey and experience with the Redeem Team, and how you play the game, his insight into the world of business, of sports, and his own life. He's now tied into the Colangelo School of Business at Grand Canyon University, an incredibly exciting and emotional venture. Let him tell you about it. And obviously, a consultant with the Philadelphia 76ers, well, let him tell you about it too, Jerry Colangelo.
We're here at the Colangelo School of Business at Grand Canyon University. Is it the Fighting Antelopes or just the Antelopes?
Antelopes.
The Antelopes fight, so it's the Antelopes. Jerry asked me as if I should know, but obviously I should. The most well-kept secret until today and beyond of what Jerry Colangelo is doing at this stage of his career, and it's been a lofty career. Jerry Colangelo, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Rick. Nice to be with you.
Thank you, as always. When we do these interviews from time to time, you are at various stages of a successful career arc, which nobody else has had through business. So start early with your career, University of Illinois, before. When did it happen that you realized that you weren't going to the NBA and you wanted to do something else?
Probably the first time I stepped on a basketball court. That realization, but look, I owe everything that happened in my life to the game of basketball. I got an education, I met all kinds of people, I traveled the world, and a lot of things happened in my life because of the game. I'm very indebted.
And as I remember it, at Illinois, you were at Kansas, and then Will Chamberlain, it didn't really work out time-wise, so you decided to transfer to Illinois.
Well, only because Will Chamberlain quit school at Kansas, and when he did, I did too, and transferred to my home state school.
And he transferred to his home state school, but he took the number 23 and used it because he figured that Michael Jordan ultimately would have to buy number 23 from him. Is that right? Not really.
It didn't work out that way. He didn't pay for it, unfortunately.
So fast forward ahead, NBA. All the things that you've done with the NBA, a very successful career as a management guy with the Suns, obviously very close to the world championship here. How for people that don't know, how close did you come?
Well, we came very close. In fact, the Phoenix Suns have the fourth best record in the history of the NBA in terms of win-loss percentage. Close but no cigar as it relates to a championship. And we were in the finals twice. We should have been in the finals another three or four times. And as I look back, we should have won two or three titles, but it wasn't meant to be. But it was a great run, and I started the franchise way back in 1968. I coached them twice in the early years. I managed as GM. I ended up putting a group together to buy the team in 1987 for $40 million. And then in 2004, we sold for $400 million. And so that was a great run. And I look back on those days with fond memories.
Look back at those days on fond memories and a maybe second thought about when you sold and how you sold it, since Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers for $2
billion? So one might say that I sold too early, because things were about to change, but that took more than a decade for that change to take place. And I don't look back on those situations, thankful for what did take place.
Let's talk about what did take place in the baseball diamond. We know you're a Cub fan. Last time we did this, the Cubs had not won the World Series yet, but of course they have recently. But your inspiration for Major League Baseball in the Valley was born at Wrigley Field. Tell us about it.
It was. Chicago was home originally, and I did grow up a Cub fan. And it's interesting, when the Diamondbacks won a World Series, which I also started back in 1998, which was our first season, we won a World Series in our fourth year, the quickest ever in the history of baseball to win a World Series. And the irony being, after all those years chasing an NBA title, again, close but not winning, here we were in our fourth year, and we win a World Series in baseball. That was really ironic for me.
Baseball heading in the right direction with Commissioner Manfred?
Rob's a good man. I had a chance to get to know him over the years in baseball, which was about a decade, and I think he was the right man for the job.
So let's segue into international basketball. We have a lot to cover. Obviously, a commitment to continuing the gold medal tradition of USA basketball over time. Done it, will continue to do it. Look back on that. How comfortable are you with where it's been? And also, more importantly, under Coach Pop, where it's going?
Well, you know, 12 years ago, I was asked to take over USA basketball, and it was at a time when it needed to be restructured. We did that. We thus went on to win three gold medals in 08, 12, and 16. And this ring here represents the 2016 gold medal winning team in Rio. And there's one more left in me, which is Tokyo in 2020. And Coach Popovich at San Antonio will be the coach replacing one of the great coaches of all time in pro and college, Coach Krzyzewski at Duke. And these last 12 years have been very, very rewarding.
So from a perspective of USA basketball, how difficult was it to sustain the brand? There were peaks, but there were also valleys. So when you started taking over, and part of your desire was to take guys who had money wasn't that important to them, but they're playing for pride, basically, that first gold medal year, was it the hardest?
Yeah, I think we had to sell something, and that was a vision and an idea that we needed to change a culture. We wanted players to feel it was important to represent your country, and they would look at it with pride. And we set out to do that back in 06. And in 08, we were ready. When we went to Beijing, players had bought in to the concept. And I promised them it would be one of the great experiences of their life if they were to buy in. And they did, and it was. And so we've been able to keep this thing on an upward curve ever since. And right now, the USA basketball program is stocked full. It's loaded. All the junior teams are gold medalists in the world today, and we should be successful for a long, long time.
We'll get to Grand Canyon in a minute, because that's really what I want to focus on. But it's December 7, 2015. December 7, that Pearl Harbor, you were appointed head of the Sixers on Pearl Harbor Day? Is that correct?
I don't remember if it fell on that date, but yes.
All right. Well, so, and the task was take a team that was really in the dumps, putting it mildly, and take, notwithstanding the tradition of Dr. J and Will Chamberlain, et cetera, and turn it into a playoff contender, and you may be almost there. How'd you start?
Well, basically to take stock and inventory about what was there, and there seemed to me to be something missing in management. And so we restructured management. I now serve in a capacity as a consultant to ownership, because there is a structure in place, and a good one. And it's actually led by Brian Colangelo, who is a two-time executive of the year in the NBA, and he now is running the franchise. And a lot of things have happened very quickly in 1 year, let alone three, that I predicted we needed in order to really become, responsible again. So that's been a fun experience again. Most everything I've ever done has been startups. Yeah. When you look at my participation in starting the Bulls, the Suns, the Diamondbacks, restructuring Philadelphia, and I want to call Grand Canyon startup too, because I think back when I got involved, it was pretty close to that.
Great segue. My interview structure, I can determine the order of the questions. So let's talk about startup at Grand Canyon. How's that? You're absolutely,
sure.
This is perfect. So we start your interest at Grand Canyon, Division III school. What? Take us through, because I know how passionate you are about this process. So take us through where this was and where it is today.
Well, Grand Canyon was a small little school on the west side of Phoenix just, you know, 5-6 years ago. But it had some tradition in basketball. Individuals like John Shumate and Paul Westfall, who played in the NBA, played for the Suns, were coaches at one time here at Grand Canyon, but it was competing on a very low level. There were 1,000 or less students here at the school at the time. But things changed when the real turnaround for the university was wanting to become much more than just a small little college. And under the leadership of Brian Mueller, it just started to take off. And in just these 5 years, you look at the number of students on campus, which is over 17,000 today, over $600 million in infrastructure to build out this campus, and there's much more to go. And it's going to top out at close to 30,000 students when it's all said and done. We're now in Division I. This is the fourth year of paying our dues, and next year we're eligible for the tournament. And we've got great leadership under Coach Dan Marley, a former Phoenix Sun, a guy we drafted some years ago. One of the most popular players ever to wear a Phoenix Suns uniform was Dan Marley. And so, you know, this whole situation is one of the great stories in the country, in my opinion, in terms of having a vision, an idea, a plan, and watch it executed before your eyes. If you saw the campus today and didn't see it again until a month from now, you would see incredible change. That's how quickly this whole thing is happening.
And Brian Mueller, and we'll talk to him a little later too, with his University of Phoenix experience coming here, it's really, as you said earlier, the hybrid model between the students who are on campus and the online world as well. It's a mix that looks like it sets the stage for the future.
You know, it's meeting the needs of a community to begin with. I think every community should have options as it relates to education. You know, back in the Midwest and in the East, there are corners in those cities, big cities, where there are three or four colleges on the same corner. That hasn't been the case here in Arizona, and I've been here since 68, and I believe understand the history of education here in our state. So, you know, young people of all ages should have an option in terms of getting an education. Some people need online because of their commitments, their family, their work. Others who can have the experience on campus, this is a great place to feel safe regarding putting your kids on a campus that has the right ethical and moral standards that go along with a college experience. And so there's a great thing going here.
And as a sports business guy, I do appreciate the fact that we have students here who are attending the Colangelo School of Business. So you obviously feel strongly enough to lend your name to this institution.
Well, that's been fun for me because I've been around long enough that a lot of things they're studying today, you know, I helped start those things many, many years ago. That's 50 years of experience. So I try to share with students here attending the university some of those experiences. And when you can do that firsthand, I think it has great merit. So I think we have a strong business school, and it's going to get stronger. I think the sports piece of it is extremely strong, and I'm very proud of that.
So part of our day today is the Grand Canyon Colangelo School of Business joint venturing with Guggenheim Life and Dan Towers to talk about the not only Arizona Sports Day in the Sun, but the social obligation of what it means to have a program, giving back, fields, training. What's your overall take of how important it is to use sports as a vehicle to do good?
You know, on my first day in Arizona, when I was introduced as the youngest general manager in pro sports back then, in 1968, I made a statement. I said, this community owes us nothing. It's up to us to earn the respect and support of the community by how we conduct ourselves as citizens, how we give back to the community. And that's always been the way I have felt, and all the people who have worked for me and all the teams, that's been what we do. It's all about that. You know, when people look back or ask you the question, what do you want to be remembered for? You want to be remembered not for accomplishments or wins. It's about What did you make your community a better place in which to live? Did you have impact on people that was positive? Did you do something good? What did you leave behind? And so I think the school here has a major commitment to giving back to the community, and they are doing it in spades.
And we have a lot of work to do. We have 2 hours of seminar, so appreciate your time. But one final question. I don't know if people in the audience remember Joe Namath. Joe Namath, come on, we all remember. But, you know, we're old. We don't know. And Joe Namath gave a guarantee for Super Bowl, and it was one of those things. You don't know if he was doing it sober or not, but it came to pass. So you are effectively the architect of a new top 25 basketball program. How long does it take for Grand Canyon to get to the Final Four?
Well, first of all, I'm not taking credit for that. What I would say is Brian Mueller's commitment to wanting Grand Canyon basketball to be in the top 25, everyone is bought into. And so, you know, we do have some people that have influence in the game of basketball here, and we're using that influence to try to speed up the process. And so there's no reason why we couldn't be there in a few years. We're going to be eligible for tournament play next year. All we need is 2 or 3 players, and we'll be there.
The best thing about Mr. Colangelo, and I've known him for a long time, is he can give you a non-answer, but it makes you feel like you got a definite answer, and I'm ready to go play for the Antelopes right now. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. Thanks, Rick.
Appreciate it.
Now it's time for Off the Beaten Track, a combination of some things that are happening that you might not always put together. Changes coming to the NFL, payments for college players, and no luck in Vegas for the Raiders as of yet. NFLPA Executive Director DeMurray Smith just ruled out renewing the current CBA, pointing to several issues, including the league's concussion protocol, player discipline, and whether players should continue to give the league stadium credits. For thousands of current and former college athletes, a $6,000 check may soon be on the way, thanks to the settlement of a far-reaching class action case. The NCAA and 11 D1 conferences agreed to create a nearly $209 million fund for the benefit of current and former D1 students and student-athletes. And the Oakland Raiders' hopes of relocating to Vegas are all but over. Goldman Sachs, the bank that originally said it would finance the Raiders' new stadium, has pulled away from the project. Ravens get an upgrade. The MLS is growing. And youth football looks different. The Baltimore Ravens planning on a $100 million investment as part of a 3-year project to renovate M&T Bank Stadium. The project becomes the team's biggest investment in facility upgrades to date, adds elevators and escalators, enlarges the end zone video boards, and improves the sound system and kitchen. 12 cities formally applied for MLS expansion bids, but only 4 of the hopeful markets will eventually land a team. Charlotte, Cincinnati, Detroit, Indy, Nashville, Phoenix, Sacramento, St. Louis, San Antonio, and Tampa all vying to join the growing domestic soccer league. And USA Football create a new format that brings the game closer to flag football and tries to avoid much of the violence in the current version. Sid the Kid wins again, Tokyo takes a hands-on approach, and sports collides with politics. Pittsburgh Penguins center Sidney Crosby finished atop the list of best-selling NHL jerseys during the first half of 16-17. His sensational 16 campaign, one that included a Stanley Cup title and last season and a spot in the last 3 on the overall points this season. 2020 Tokyo Olympics have a weirdly unique feature. The medals that will be awarded to athletes will be made from recycled materials. The medals from the forged recycled metal, old mobile phones and appliances donated by the general public to give them a sense of direct involvement in the game. And Mexican and American soccer teams planning to play a tournament to protest the wall Donald Trump plans to build. We'll see the details later. Finally, San Diego State streak is over, women's soccer a new home, and the NFL expanding. San Diego State's impressive 80-game regular season sellout streak over, and the university now struggling to keep its students interested in the team. Last season saw a 10-15% no-show rate for students at basketball games at Viejas Arena, with the trend escalating this season. The NWSL now has its game streamed on Lifetime after A&E Networks purchased an equity stake in the league. Weekly matches streamed on the network, and their plans to launch NWSL Media, overseeing the streaming of all matches. And finally, the NFL looking to expand its international series in Canada. The NFL scouted 4 Canadian teams as possible sites for future regular season games. Stadiums, that is. And that's off the beaten track. And now, time for my final take. In sports, as in life, sometimes the biggest actions come from the smallest voices. Nike launched its massive equality initiative this last week, designed to bring attention to racial injustice. Multiple newspaper ads starring LeBron James, Serena Williams, Megan Rapinoe, Kevin Durant, and a corresponding spot that aired during the Grammys. Also, but a really significant issue, maybe even more important, a New Jersey co-ed basketball team decided to forfeit its entire season rather than kick 2 female teammates off the team after a New Jersey CYO league director handed down the ruling that a co-ed basketball team was not allowed in the boys' league. Players on the St. John's fifth grade team voted unanimously to forego the season, according to NJ.com. After the opposing team left the gym, as did the officials, the St. John's team split up and scrimmaged each other wearing hashtag Unity t-shirts and a positive sportsmanship deal. Here's my take. At a time in which we need it more than ever, these youngsters didn't just hypothesize that sports delivers unity, they proved it. And that's my final take for today. We'd like to thank Jerry Colangelo. We'd like to thank Jason Levine and Tanner Simpkins for putting the show together. If you're interested, look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. And don't forget, next week, spring training, NHL, NBA, NASCAR, and other things. Join us when we go Beyond the Scoreboard.